Being recorded.
Okay, well, welcome everybody. This is our second PE 102 conference call, and I'd like to acknowledge that I'm hosting it from the traditional territory of the Kwanlundun First Nation and Ton Kwachin Council. And it's great to see everybody in the chat. So feel free to pop a hi in there just so that we know it's working. Sometimes if the chat doesn't get activated on your end for a while, it sort of boots you out. So, you know, you can put hello or put a comment in every so often if you'd like to. What we're going to do is we've got a great call today, and there's people who are finishing up their certificate and people who are starting. So, you know, I love the conversations that we have on the conference calls because you guys bring so many rich ideas to the call, and it's great to hear how you share your perspectives. And one thing I've learned is how much people from one end of the North or the Arctic learn from other people in other communities because, you know, our communities are very diverse, but it's great to learn from each other. So last week, you might remember that I explained that as a recreation leader, you may encounter situations where you're told about or suspect child or elder abuse, self-harm behaviors, or other behaviors that are very concerning. So I just wanted to remind you that PE 102 does not introduce what to do in these circumstances. Each of your territories will have different rules about the age of a child and the duty of professionals and community members to report. And each community has different resources who can help in these situations. So for more information, please make sure that you take a look at the links and explore more and talk to your local RCMP or social services if you need more help. So on today's call, we're going to start with a round of introductions, and I'll always pop the question in the chat so that you can refer to it. When we have our conversations, you're welcome to speak up as we go around our circle, or you're welcome to pop your answer in the chat as, or do both, whichever you feel most comfortable with. It's up to you. Listening and sharing are both equally important ways of learning, so I'd like you to feel comfortable doing what works for you the best. So once we've done our introductions, we're going to get into a discussion about how a strengths-based approach can help our participants have more positive recreation experiences. So you might remember that last week we looked at positive experiences in recreation and how these are shaped by our participants' behaviors and by our own awareness and ability to empathize. We talked about the behaviors that we sometimes see and how there's lots of different factors that we might not know about that influence those behaviors that we're seeing. So we talked about how taking the time to try and understand what might underlie or be underneath some of the challenging behaviors can help us be a bit more understanding and empathetic. As you can see on slide 21, empathy helps us tackle challenging situations with a strengths-based approach rather than a problem-solving approach. So before I jump any further into the content, let's do a round of introductions. I see that Joshua is on the call. So here's our circle for today. We're going to start in the Yukon and end in the Yukon. So we're going to go Haley and Jed, then Megan, then Ethan and Morgan, and then Joshua. So a great big circle all the way from Whitehorse to Teslin, out to Baker Lake, up to Kugluktuk, and back to Farrell. So if you can imagine what that might look like on a map, that's our circle today. So when you introduce yourself, I'm wondering if you could share, if you have one, an example of either your own beliefs or a belief that other people show that demonstrates a strengths-based approach. And I'm going to pop the question in the chat, and then I'll tell you what my example is, and that might help you come up with one for yourself. So again, the question is if you can introduce yourself, and then if you'd like to, share an example of a strengths-based belief. And so my strengths-based belief, and I'll put it in the chat too, is that challenges are opportunities that we can explore, not something that we avoid. So I find that challenges always are an opportunity. Even if it's challenging, it's an opportunity to look and do something differently. So I try not to avoid challenges, even though some days I might like to. So let's start with Haley and Jed, because you guys are on the phone together. You can choose who goes first. If you'd like to introduce yourself and share an example of a strengths-based belief.
Hi, I'm Jed Sharp. I work with recreation in Teslin. I think a good strength-based approach to things work in cooperation with others as best as possible.
Great. So just so I got that correctly, Jed, you said work in cooperation with others as much as possible, right?
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you. And Haley, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, my name's Haley. I'm a recreation worker located in Teslin. A strength-based approach is just kind of like Jed's. If you work with each other instead of against each other, things happen a lot easier and a lot better, I think.
Oh, I like that. So work with each other rather than against each other. That's a great example. Thank you. And let's go over to Megan.
Hi, this is Megan Hashi. I am with Sport and Recreation with the Government of Nunavut. Strength-based beliefs. I do believe that challenges and adversity can definitely foster strength and resiliency, but I also believe that there should be opportunities and resources to help people recover and feel safe.
Oh, that's great. Thank you. That's two, but they're connected, right? So the fact that when we do experience adversity or challenges, it can foster our strength and resiliency, but that we need to have resources available to help us with that. So thanks so much, Megan. Those are great examples of a strengths-based belief. Thank you. And Ethan and Morgan, would you guys, one of you like to talk, both of you like to share your idea, maybe if you introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Ethan Hudson from Kokluktuk. I'm recreation coordinator for the hamlet of Kokluktuk. And for the strength-based approach and belief, I'm not too really sure what you say on that part. My mind went blank when you asked that question.
Yeah, and I would say from knowing, or from getting to know you, from a long distance over the phone, I think one thing that you've shared with me that you believe, Ethan, is the importance of being accepting and inclusive of many different people in your community. So, you know, accepting people for who they are and being welcoming, that's an example of a strengths-based belief. And that's something that, at least from how I know you, I perhaps that would ring true. Would you say that I'm correct, or am I a little off base there?
I would agree with you.
Thanks, Ethan. Morgan, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Morgan. I'm the youth coordinator from the hamlet of Kokluktuk, and I'd agree with Ethan.
Great. It's nice when you have common sort of approaches, right? And you believe in things in a similar way because it makes it easier to work together. Which comes back to what both Jed and Haley said about working together. So when we have similar beliefs and values, it's actually easier to cooperate and work together. So thanks for sharing that and introducing yourself, Morgan. Over to you, Joshua, and then I heard a beep, so somebody else might have joined the call after. So let's go to Joshua first and then find out who else might have joined the call.
Hi, everyone. My name is Joshua Wilcox. I work here in Faro as the rep assistant underneath Dennis Bonto. One of my strength-based beliefs would be judgment, not to carry any judgment. Doesn't matter what you've done, what you're doing, or who you are, your beliefs. I believe that you belong in any type of sport or event that is being held.
That's great. Thanks. And that's such an important belief in a small community, especially, right? So thank you for sharing that, Joshua. And did somebody else join the call who hasn't been able to introduce themselves yet?
Hi, this is the group from Kwame Dunn. So it's my Kelly, Dana, and Serena are here today.
Great. So what we're doing, Kelly, Dana, and Serena, is we're just introducing ourselves and sharing, if you'd like, an example of a belief that you have about a strengths-based approach or a strengths-based belief. So my example is in the chat. You may have heard Joshua's. My example is that challenges are opportunities to explore, not something to avoid. So if you guys would like to go around your mini circle where you are and take a turn and introduce yourself, and if you have a strengths-based belief, go ahead and share it.
I can introduce us all because I'm closest to the phone right now. So we work for Kwame Dunn, and we are in the youth rec department, and we are youth recreation support workers here. We came on when everybody was saying, introducing and saying, or sharing, sorry. I would just echo probably what everyone's saying. I think the strength-based approach is to me a more engaged and, you know, positive approach. And I think it brings value and it's received better, and it provides space for people to learn and to grow without feeling pressured or put down, if that makes sense. My brain is just starting to click. We just got into the office. So.
Okay. Did anyone else want to just introduce themselves without sharing their perspective on strengths-based beliefs?
Dana says hi, but she's a little bit farther from the phone.
Okay, yeah, and it's hard when people...
It's on my desk, so we usually stay at our desk just for distance.
Yeah, so that's okay. If one person speaks on your behalf, that works for me too. So that's a team effort.
Awesome.
Thank you. Okay, so as your introductions show, a strengths-based approach, which it sounds like many of us believe in, or all of us believe in, brings out, you know, the best side of people. It benefits the participants in our programs. It helps them grow in ways that are really positive. It helps prevent challenges in our programs. And as Haley and Jed pointed out right at the beginning, it stresses cooperation and teamwork and working together. And as Ethan and Morgan pointed out, it emphasizes being welcoming and making people feel, like Joshua said, that they can all be part of something regardless of where they come from. So if a strengths-based approach is really supportive, I wonder why we need to learn about it. Like, if we already believe in it, why is it important to learn and talk about this? And I'd like us to go back to our childhood, and for me, that's a long time ago, but let's recall our own experiences growing up as children. So I have a question for you, and you can type the answer in the chat. It's just a very, very short answer, or you can say it as I go around the circle. And so the question for you is, if you think back to when you grew up or when you were a child, what do you remember most from your childhood? Do you remember a focus on strengths or on problems? And you can just choose to answer that part. But if you have an example to highlight your answer, then by all means, share it. So I'll start. And then, Megan, can we start with you for this circle round? So we'll go Megan, Ethan, Morgan, Joshua, Kelly, Dana, Serena, Haley, Jed. We'll start at a different place each time we go around the circle. So, Megan, for yourself, do you mostly remember a focus as a child where adults around you who were running programs and stuff focused on strengths or on problems?
Yeah. So one of the first things that comes to mind is, like, when you're playing basketball, we don't really look at where, like, if somebody is really good at dribbling but not the best at shooting, we're not going to say you have to fix your shooting and you can't work on anything else. We're going to say, okay, we're going to make you the ball handler and we're going to put you where your strengths lie.
That's great, and that's a really good way to build a team, right? Because you're letting everybody contribute based on what they where they're strong, right? It doesn't mean you don't develop those other skills in them, but it means that you let them shine where they do shine. Does that make sense?
Yep.
That's great. That's a really nice example. Thank you, Megan. Ethan and Morgan, and one of you can answer this for both of you. If you think back to when you were children, do you remember an example of people more focusing on strengths or on problems?
Hi, yeah, this is Morgan. I'd say on strength, like when I was in a table tennis team and my coach would teach me how to swing my arm and make me a better player at table tennis, so I'd say strength.
That's great. That's a really good experience. And then you connect better with that coach, right? So when the coach focuses on building from what you already can do and supporting you to improve that, the relationship with your coach is better as well. So thank you for sharing that, Morgan. Ethan, did you want to add anything, or were you guys sharing one example between the two of you?
Yeah, he'd agree with me.
Okay, awesome. Thank you. Let's go to Joshua. Joshua, how about yourself? Growing up, do you mostly remember a focus on strengths or problems? Okay, no worries. You can pass. That's great. Thanks for popping that in the chat, though, so I don't put you on the spot. Okay, let's go to Kwanlin Dunn. So, Kelly, I think you're talking for everybody or whoever wants to. Do you guys remember from being young a focus on strengths or on problems?
This is from a personal perspective, but when I was growing up, it's a cute example, I think. Like, my mom was really big on strength-based, so, like, at a birthday party once, we were playing musical chairs. However, this version of musical chairs was that, like, every round when a chair got taken out, nobody else, like, no person participating got taken out. You just have to keep piling onto the remaining chairs. So you have to work together. So, like, yeah,
that's
to, like,
awesome.
Get yourself onto the chairs. And it's very wholesome and very cute. And that's kind of the attitude my mom had when we were growing up. So I think it's very cute. Like, as a kid, you're like, what? It's competition. But as you get older, you appreciate it, I think. So, yeah.
Yeah, and that's a great example because the problem center approach does focus a little bit more on that competition, like I win, you lose type thing. And this way, it's not that. It's we all win. Doesn't matter how many people are in a chair, but we all win at this game because we have fun.
Yeah.
So it's a different way of approaching it.
Yeah, and I was into a lot of sports, and that was very different. I had very hardline coaches, which I really responded to well. So I guess it balanced it out a bit.
Yeah. And Dana popped in the chat that she feels like she grew up with a combination of both. So, sometimes a focus on how to use strengths to solve problems, which is actually a strengths-based approach. So thanks for sharing that, Dana. Let's go over to Haley and Jed. If one of you wants to talk or both of you, it's up to you. But what do you recall from growing up? Do you mostly remember a focus on strengths or on problems?
Well, it's Haley here, and I'm going to talk for both of us for this one. We both think it was a mixture. In one of the programs I was in, it was very strength-based, very bringing, like, they brought us kids up. And in the other program I was in, it was if you didn't do the movement correctly, you got in trouble and you had to do that movement over and over and over and over again. So I think
that's hard. Yeah, so how I imagine that you thrived in the environment where it was focusing on what you did well and bringing you up versus the other one. Is that right?
I kind of just thrived in both of them because I'm the type of person where I take people who talk down to me and tell me, like, oh, that's wrong, or you can't do that, and I change it into motivation to make myself be able to go and do that.
Yeah, so that's really interesting that you say that, because I think perhaps most of us on the call are able to do that for ourselves, but some of the participants in our programs might not have developed those skills yet. So at the beginning of the call, Megan talked about, you know, making sure that we have resources for people to address adversity and challenges and grow and become resilient. So, you know, Haley, maybe you developed sort of those skills as you grew up. You were in an environment where you were able to become more strong and resilient and things like that, the way Megan mentioned it. But I think that sometimes we have participants in our program who, in all of their environments, whether it's homeschool or in recreation, people anticipate the worst from them. They always expect there to be problems rather than looking for where there's opportunities. And so that type of environment can make it very difficult to focus on strengths or develop the resilience that both you and Megan mentioned. So thanks for raising that. That's a really good way to wrap up this round of questions. One of the things that came to my mind when I wrote this question down for you is I think of our healthcare system, and recreation in some communities is connected to wellness and health and well-being and things. So think of our healthcare system, and our healthcare system to me is a really good example of a problem-centered approach. Less than 2% of the budget of our entire healthcare system is spent on prevention, which is, you know, focusing on what people are already doing well and building that. So healthy eating, physical activity, those are examples of prevention. I think our healthcare system focuses on you're sick, now what are we going to do with it? So it's always looking at those problems. So that's a big example, but I just wanted to raise that with you. I think as recreation leaders, we are fortunate working in the field of recreation because recreation really is a positive environment to work in. But we also live in a society where our participants can come from those backgrounds where they experience more of this problem-centered approach. So I think it's really important for us to make sure we use a strengths-based approach in our work as recreation leaders. And you start to begin to shift your approach if you need to, or strengthen the approach that you have by examining your own beliefs. So for example, if you believe that the glass is half full rather than half empty, and you believe in people's ability to change, so then it's much easier to act in a way that's consistent with sort of a positive strengths-based approach. So now that we've explored some of the beliefs that go along with a strengths-based approach, I'd like us to consider some of the actions and strategies that might show a strengths-based approach. Like, what would we see someone doing if they were using a strengths-based approach? So if you have the slides open, slide 24 does share a few of those. If you don't worry about it, because I'm going to ask you to share your own as well. And slide 25 introduces strategies. And there is a difference to me between actions and strategies. Actions are sort of like a clear thing that we can see and do, whereas a strategy might be a whole bunch of actions put together. It's a little bit more of, it might require some learning on your part to put in place. So let's keep it simple and begin with actions. So my question for you then is, what are some strengths-based actions that recreation leaders can use? And I think some of you may have already sort of commented on some of these in your required learning activities. But let's try again. And Ethan and Morgan, if it's okay with you, maybe we can start with you. And if you want to pass, that's all right too. But what are some actions that recreation leaders can do to show their strengths-based approach?
Hi, this is Morgan. I'll pass.
Okay. And so I'll suggest something for you, and you let me know if it sounds about right. So, Morgan, you and Ethan talked about being very welcoming and inclusive of people. So when your participants come to your programs, how do you show them that you're welcoming? What do you do?
Just, like, have a positive vibe and welcoming vibe and just be happy and positive.
Yeah, and, like, you don't ignore them, right? When they walk in, you say, hey, how are you doing today? Or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So that's an example of an action. Is welcoming is sort of something that the word that we use to describe it, but the action is, how do you show that you're welcoming? So you might have a smile on your face, you might be energetic, you might say, hello, come on in, you know, or it's good to see you today, or do you want a healthy snack to start off the program? So those are some of the strengths-based actions that I'm guessing you guys might use in your programs in Kugluktuk. That sound about right?
Yeah, that's right.
Awesome, thanks. Okay, let's go to Joshua. How about yourself? What are some actions, like things that you can specifically say that, and I know you do a lot of these, so that you can use that are strengths-based? And if it's not about you, what other people could do or use?
I guess one of the things that I would do to continue on with this is going down to talk to people that you wouldn't normally see at a rec center because they don't feel like they belong. Or when somebody comes in and everybody strays away from them because they look kind of scary, is still communicate, talk, get to know them. Basically.
Yeah, so that's great. Sorry, go ahead.
No, that's good. That's good. I'll just end up carrying on, and I don't want to do that. LOL.
Okay. Well, I like that because what you're saying is that welcoming isn't just about waiting for people to come into your program or your facility. It's also about getting to know them outside of the recreation context so that they feel welcome and they're more inclined to come to your program. Did I hear that right?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. It's always easier when you've got a friend or somebody you know in these events.
That's great. Thanks, Joshua. Okay, Kelly and Dana and Serena, what are here's one. Dana said some feedback from KDFN. You use their names. You check in with them when they come in and see where they're at and what capacity they can participate at. You take their requests for healthy snacks. That's great. that's a good educational approach, too. So thanks, Dana. Kelly, did you want to add anything for yourself or Serena to what Dana's typed in?
We did that one as a collective, and then Dana threw it up in the chat.
That's great. Thank you. Haley and Jed, how about yourselves? What are some strengths-based actions that you use or that other recreation leaders could use?
I like to encourage going, not give up things. And if it does seem a bit harder.
So just so I've got that clear, because you're kind of, I think the phone line is cutting in and out a little bit. Did you say that you like to encourage people to talk about things?
To keep going with stuff and not give up.
Oh, okay. So you like to motivate them then.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you. That's really important because when somebody feels like they might not belong or they don't feel like they can do what everybody else can do, it's pretty easy to want to quit or give up. So that encouragement is definitely a strengths-based action. Thank you. Haley, did you want to add anything to that?
I like to set the ground rules and expectations and boundaries before a program starts. Therefore, when you're telling a kid not to do that, you can say, we already told you the rules. This is now your one warning, instead of while they're in the middle of doing it, saying, hey, you can't do that.
Right, and I think, too, setting ground rules is respectful because then everybody falls under the same rules, right? They don't feel like different people are being treated differently.
Correct.
That's great. Thanks, Haley. And Megan, over to you. What are some actions that you either have used as a recreation leader that are strengths-based or that you've watched other recreation leaders use?
Yeah, I would say a strength-based action is to ensure that you have diversity and range in your programs. So say you run an art program and almost every session you have them do painting. That would be really, that's really good for the people who are good at painting, but you might have a couple participants who are better at like clay work and sculptures. And if you don't keep giving different opportunities and different options for people to explore their strengths, they'll never see where they shine.
That's a really good example. And that actually links us back to one of the other learning events, which was PE 101 Design and Deliver, Design and Deliver Programs and Events. And in that learning event, we talked about the importance of having a range of different things, and that was to make it interesting. But what I hear you saying is this way different people can shine or enjoy what they do well and other people can learn from, and it also helps them learn from each other, I think, so that you're never putting the same person in a position that they do everything well because you're doing the same activity. And I think, Megan, could you apply that to like something like an after-school program as well?
Yeah, definitely. So there's an after-school program here in the schools, and a lot of people like playing basketball during those programs. But maybe there's a few students who really enjoy and are really good at badminton. If you never play badminton throughout the entire year, then you're never giving those students a chance to practice and improve their skills.
That's great, yeah. So diversity and a mix of activities so that it really is strengthens all of your participants rather than a few of them. So thanks for sharing, everybody. That was a good conversation piece. Thank you. So let's move on then. I mentioned actions and strategies, and I said that strategies are a lot bigger than actions. My understanding of strategies is that they include a number of actions that often require you to change something or to put something in place. And so you can see the difference between actions and strategies on the slides 24 and 25 in the PE 102 presentation. On slide 26, I've included an example of a strategy for you, so I'm just going to explain this one. I'm not sure if NWT and Nunavut use this, but in the Yukon, the zones of regulation are used in schools. And so my understanding is that if we understand as recreation leaders what the schools are using to support positive behaviors, then we can use the same things in out-of-school settings or after-school settings, and then the kids aren't confused by different approaches or different things. So that's one of the reasons I included this. So the zones of regulation, it's like a framework, and it's supposed to help children and youth understand and regulate their physical response to stress. While I'm explaining this, maybe those of you in the chat can just put a yes or a no as to whether you've heard about the zones of regulation before. I'm just curious. So if you're in the chat, type yes if you've heard of the zones of regulation or no if you haven't heard of them. So the red zone that you see here, it describes a heightened state of alertness and sort of more intense emotions. A person in this zone might be super hyper excited, or they might be really angry, have explosive behavior, or even terror. So the yellow zone then, if we're moving from right to left, describes heightened alertness and elevated emotions, but with more self-control. A person might be stressed, experience frustration, anxiety, silliness, the wiggles, if you think of that, or nervousness. The green zone describes more of a calm state of alertness, which is optimal for learning. So a person might be happy, focused, content, or ready to learn. And for those of you who do on the land programming, that's probably that one or perhaps moving a little into the yellow where you're more alert are really important to be at, because then you're a little bit more in tune and in touch with what your surroundings are and you can respond to them better. The blue zone on the far left describes a really low state of alertness, and a person might feel sad, tired, they might be bored or moving really slowly. So although it's natural, as you can see, that we all might experience each of these zones at different points in time, this framework helps children and youth recognize and manage their zone based on the environment, its demands, and the people in it. So I'll just give you an example. If you're on a playground or playing in a gym in a really active game, children might be more in the yellow zone. They might be excited. They might be sort of giggly about something. And usually in those types of environments where they can be super active, when they're moving around, they're playing, it's okay to have that heightened sort of level. But you can imagine if you're like in an art program or a reading program or something like that, that type of alertness might not work as well. So then you want people to be a little bit more and adjust it, the behavior, to the green zone. So I noticed that some of you are familiar with it and some not so much. Dana, you mentioned that it's definitely used in schools here. So I know you're far away from the phone, so maybe I won't put you on the spot. But Haley, where have you heard about it, in the school system, or did you learn about it somewhere else?
The school system, and I have nieces and everything, and their mom is a teacher. So as soon as it like became somewhat of a thing, she told me about it, so I could help my nieces and other children understand their emotions better.
Great, and I think that that's a really useful tool. It's not the only tool. This is just one example. It might not work for different cultures, so don't feel like, oh, I should know about this. But I included it just to give you an example of one type of strategy that we can use in our programs with children. So thanks for explaining, Haley, where you got it from. So you might find opportunities that where you can encourage other recreation leaders and volunteers who work with you to use a strengths-based approach. Or sometimes you might find a time when you need to justify why you are acting or not in a certain way. Perhaps a parent expects you to send a child home, but maybe that response isn't consistent with our strengths-based approach. So in these cases, you might want to be able to describe to a parent, to a supervisor, to chief and counsel, to your SAO, what a strengths-based approach is and why it's a benefit or why it's good to use this type of approach in recreation. So we're going to take a couple of minutes before we end our call to talk about why a strengths-based approach or what the benefits of a strengths-based approach are. So I've got a couple of questions. I'm going to pop them in the chat, and you don't have to answer all three, just maybe whatever happens to come to mind. So my questions are, how do people or program participants benefit when a strengths-based approach is used? How would groups and communities benefit, or what might we as recreation leaders experience when we use a strengths-based approach? So I'm looking for, what are the advantages of a strengths-based approach for our participants, for our organizations and communities, or for ourselves as recreation leaders? So you can answer one or more of those. So the benefits of using a strengths-based approach are, and I think last time I started with Ethan and Morgan, so Joshua, I'm going to put you on the spot and ask you if you want to take a shot at one of these questions. What's the benefit to using a strengths-based approach?
Well, yeah, you kind of caught me at a bad moment. But what I consider a strength-based approach would be, I'm pretty firm with my rules and I don't allow much wiggle room. But the biggest thing is being consistent. And when I'm consistent, they people in the program understand that there's a line and they've never tried to cross it. So everybody knows, they're aware of what their job is or their task or whatever it is that we're doing.
Yeah, so being consistent in what your expectations are, if for those of you who have the slide presentation or the PE-102 presentation open, if you take a look at slide 27, what Joshua just commented on is actually two types of benefits. One is the benefit for yourself as the recreation leader. I think it reduces your stress because you use a consistent approach for everybody and you don't have to make decisions in each situation, because by having those clear expectations about behavior and the clear boundaries, your decision making is made easier when you're faced with challenging situations. And then for participants in your program, I think that they, it does build a sense of belonging. Like, they, people do need to know what the boundaries are and what the rules are, and then they feel like they belong to a group, because it doesn't matter what society or what culture in the world, all cultures have rules and social norms. So if we establish those in our programs, it helps people feel like they belong there. Would that make sense, Joshua? Did I sort of summarize what you were saying?
Bang on. You are okay. An absolute professional.
So are you. We all are here. You said it first. I just summarized it. So thank you for sharing that. Kelly, Dana, and Serena, any thoughts about how a strengths-based approach is beneficial for us as recreation leaders? There we go. So it makes it easier for leaders, because instead of fighting against negative behaviors, you're working alongside them to find a solution together. So that connects back to your belief about cooperation, about what Haley and Jed said right at the beginning of the call about teamwork, because you're exactly right. We're not fighting negative behaviors, everyone's working together. So thank you, Dana. Anything else to add to that, Kelly or Serena? I'm guessing you guys worked on that one together. Okay, over to Haley and Jed then. And again, you can answer it individually or together. What are your thoughts about how a strengths-based approach benefits either your program participants, your communities, or you as recreation leaders?
Focusing on their skills can definitely come to improve on them.
Yeah, so that's right. So when you focus on, I think Megan mentioned about the basketball, you know, focusing on where you've already got some skills and building on that. So I think that type of strengths-based approach really helps people develop their skills rather than stopping their skills from developing or you know, sort of leaving them where they're at. So is that what you're kind of thinking about, Jed?
Yeah, that's where I'm trying to go.
Awesome. Thanks. Haley, anything to add? Any other thoughts about how a strengths-based approach is beneficial? Like, how would it benefit your community if you and your recreation program is using a strengths-based approach?
I think it just makes for, like, a happy, healthier community, because you're giving them options to come out and do things instead of, like, for our youth, instead of, like, causing trouble. We have programs that they can come and fill their time with instead of running around and being bad kids.
Yeah, so if you imagine that an after-school program, a child comes to your after-school program and feels supported, feels part of it, is able to develop their skills, is able to feel like they belong somewhere. By using that strengths-based approach in your program, that child now goes home and is starting to feel better about themselves. It builds their self-esteem. It builds their confidence in themselves. And that they can take that home, and they can also take that to school and in other places in the community. So you're exactly right. Like, what we do in our recreation programs doesn't just affect our participants, it also affects our communities. So thank you for sharing that. Over to you, Megan. Any thoughts about the benefits to either ourselves as recreation leaders, to communities, to our groups, or to individuals? What are the benefits when we use a strengths-based approach?
Yeah, one of the first things that came to mind was when we use the strengths-based approach with our participants, it encourages and supports continuous learning for ourselves. So if we help our participants explore and improve their strengths, we can in turn learn from them, whether it's resources or connections or even skills.
Exactly. So if a lot of people might not think about that, right? But that's a great example of a benefit for yourself that comes as a result of investing in the people in your program. And I'm not sure if you know this, Megan, but that's sort of underlying my philosophy for the conference calls. I believe that all of us on these calls brings something that we can all contribute. And, you know, my job isn't to teach you guys anything. It's to help you share your ideas and your knowledge and your experiences so that we can all learn from each other. So thanks for pointing that out. Did you have anything else to add to that, Megan?
It's just pretty similar to what everyone else is saying. Like, when we help our participants explore their own strengths, we are helping to improve their self-esteem, because if we're always focusing on where they can do better and what someone might consider a weakness, then they'll never feel good about where they shine.
Yeah. And when we build, or when we help support the development of healthy self-esteem in children and youth, what does that mean for when they're adults in our communities?
They'll feel more comfortable sharing and helping the next generation of youth.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why on slide 27 here, I've said a benefit for communities is more volunteers. So when we invest our time now into the young people in our communities as they grow into roles as young adults in our communities, they will understand and learn how to do the same for the younger generation growing up. So it's a nice cycle to that sort of positive building on our strengths helps everybody grow together. So thanks for sharing that, Megan. Ethan and Morgan, not to leave you till the end, but that was quite a conversation. Do you have anything else that you'd like to add about the benefits of using a strengths-based approach in our programs or in our communities? Oh, I see. Sorry, Morgan, I missed you. It popped right up in front of me. You said the benefits of a strengths-based approach in a program is the outcome. That's right. So when you're exactly right. If the program's more enjoyable and fun, then you're going to get more participants. You're going to have more fun as the leader. So the children feel more welcome, and it will be a happy environment to play in. And your program will thrive. And when your program does better, so when the kids keep coming back, it's also good for your organization. So your recreation department or your hamlet will be able to say, our programs are working really well. You know, we need more support. So by using that strengths-based approach, it's helping the individuals, your participants. It's helping you as recreation leaders. It's helping the organization that you work for or and it's also helping your community. So thanks for sharing all that, everybody. I feel like today's I love this conversation today. So thank you for sharing your ideas with each other. Just to wrap up the call, I wanted to mention that your second required learning activity for this learning event is due on Sunday. And I know it's a 4-day weekend. If you absolutely, you know, need a 4-day weekend, then you can share it with me next week. That's okay. But try not to leave it too long, because I think most of you are carrying on into our next learning event that starts on April 25th. So try and finish up your activities for this learning event before the next one starts, because it gets hard to sort of carry them over. And so what you do in your second part It's part B of your required learning activity. So if you haven't done part A, make sure you do part A first and then do part B. So that's week one and week two required learning activities. And what you're going to do is build on your post from your first post or your first what you shared, and you're going to identify two strengths-based strategies or actions that were used or could have been used to improve the situation that you described in your first required learning activity. And if you are using anything online, like let's say you use the zones of regulation, and you found some information online, just make sure you include a link to where you found that, because it might be helpful for other people as well. So I'd like to thank all of you for contributing to today's conversation. If you have any questions, just stay on the line after I finish the conference call recording. And I'd like to invite anybody who's still in the chat just to pop a congratulations to Ethan, because this is his last learning event, and as soon as he's done his activity, he will have earned his certificate in Northern Recreation Leadership. And for anybody in Nunavut, RPN usually awards a nice blue jacket as well. So I'll be letting Dawn know that you're just about ready for your jacket, Ethan. So congratulations. So thanks, everybody. And for those of you who are new to the learning event, we also have a feedback form, and it's number 7, and you just click that. And it's a really short form, but it helps me improve these learning events in the future. So, Ethan, I think you're still in the chat, but there's a few congratulations coming in to you there. So thank you so much, everybody. Masicho Kwana Nakrumik, and have a wonderful long weekend, and I'll look forward to reading your other activities. Stay on the line after I stop the recording if you have any other questions.
Thanks so much.